You are listening to WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network, coming to you from the heart of the Q in Quitman, Mississippi.
Old Men Stories, a show just about old men? Not hardly. It's a name that conjures up the image of someone who's been through it all, seen it all, and survived it all, like the storytellers of old. That wisdom comes with age. But all age is relative. You don't have to be old. You don't have to be male. You just have to live the story and survive to tell the tale. Join Master Storytellers Roland Willits and Jeff Young now as we start today's journey.
Good afternoon, everyone, from Fremont, California, and Mountain View, Arkansas. It's Old Man Stories, the fire-starting episode. You can't start a fire without a spark. Roland, are you there?
I'm certainly here. I'm right up in the middle of the Ozarks. They just had some fire-starting episodes around here. They had lightning, thunder, and tornadoes within the last week. We drove by and some real tragedies in the area. But everyone here is enthusiastic, and I'm in the middle of the World Center for Folk Country Singing.
Collecting things for our sister show, then?
Yes, I am.
Indeed. Well, the thing about fire, and fire starts in particular, it starts show, is that one of the most elemental things that we as a species have that is uniquely ours, the ability to set fire. And a couple of weeks ago, we covered fireplaces, and I told a story about setting my eyebrows on fire at one point, but that never stopped me from really starting fires when I was a kid. Of course, supervised, most of the time anyway, but just the simple art of lighting a match to start a gas oven was something I remember being rather intimidated by when I first learned how to cook, because you're supposed to take the oven, turn on the gas, wait for the gas to build up a little bit, and then light a match on the stove and put the match in the hole. And bear in mind, I needed a chair to get up to the stove, turn on the burner, light the match, get off of the chair, open the oven door, and put the match in the hole. And there's this giant oven that at the time I was probably still just about the right size to possibly fit into. And the entire oven goes whoosh, as the thing lights up. And that was always really intimidating to me. These days, I actually miss having a gas oven and a gas stove, because electric stoves just don't quite cook things the way you want them to. And watching restaurant chefs on television with their giant burner, ring burners and the ability to go take wine and set it on fire, that was really impressive cooking to me. I know it's more all show than anything else, but still. Fire is lovely to observe from a distance and harder to start than you might think. I used to have a habit of carrying matches in my pocket, even though I didn't smoke, even though most of them I didn't sit on the fire. But as a writer to be, one of the things I always figured would happen, just like in the stories, is that I'd be stuck in a dark place and have to light a match. Now, that being said, the matchbooks that you used to get at any old restaurant, because if you went out for a smoke, you needed a match half the time, and it was good advertising to have a matchbook with your restaurant name on it, those are some of the worst matches to light in the universe. You wind up having to try to light them several times, and because they're the tear-off kind, they bend in half after the first strike, and if you don't get it the first time, you're pretty much out of luck. So the idea of carrying a matchbook around my pocket was pretty ridiculous in its own way, because after a while, the matchbook gets bent up, and you really can't light a match off of them at all. That didn't stop me. And there were always lighters around my grandfather's house on my dad's side, because he was an avid pipe smoker, and my other uncle was a cigarette smoker. Just as a thought, I think both of them wound up with some form of lung cancer complications from smoking. So bear in mind, smoking does have an effect. The upshot, though, is that there are always lighters lying around, so if you really wanted to light something up, you could. The thing that I really like starting fires with the most, I'll tell you about in a bit. Roland.
Oh, hey. Starting fires have, you know, always been one of the little dangerous things that we both participated in. You know, one of the ending of my story was there's always a story around someone with fringed eyebrows. And I've had fringed eyebrows. And it's usually a lot of them happen on Coleman stoves. You start and you pump the whole thing up, then you sort of not pay attention for the wrong second. You start again, that thing is poof.
Oh, yes, Coleman stoves. Pump it up, light it up, stand back.
That's right. Coleman stoves were part of my life. We had them way back when they started coming out. So you got to get, I was a camp counselor several summers. So I had to teach kids how to light fires. You know, you do shifts on your job. One day you'd be out teaching them how to swim. The next day you'd teach them how to archery. And then you'd get the outdoor one where you'd teach them how to light fires. And lighting fires was always, always interesting because you have this whole repertoire of things there to do. You would show them different ways of starting it. From little, you'd have little flints and you'd show them and you'd have all the different things. Normally, you didn't actually light the fire, you just showed how to use it, but you'd have to do it with one of them. And what I would enjoy doing is they have a little technique where you can spin a stick. It was, I think they had it in one movie with Tom Hanks. You'd need a string. So what I would do is I'd say, oh, how are you guys going to get a string? Now you got to get throughout a camp. So they all had high boots. So I would just say, look down at your feet. And they'd always have the boot on. I'd say, do you see a string there? And they have the lace of their boots. Sometimes they're, you know, the cool ones are the leather ones. A regular one would work just fine. And then what they would do is they'd get a stick and they'd make it, bend it into a bow shape. And then they would tie the, you know, the ends of their shoelaces on each side and they'd twist it once around the stick and they'd move it back and forth and that stick would start spinning. And then I'd teach them to find a little piece of rock that had just right enough indentation that it would stay in place and hold the rock up on one side, you know, on top of it, and then put another a piece of board on the bottom and just go back and forth. And they would, all of them get smoked. A lot of them would get fire going, and, you know, we'd have to help them a little, you know. And, you know, it's usually with the kindling. Getting the first little thing to start is the hardest because you got to get the good kindling, and kindling can be almost anything. From lint you have sitting around, which works real good. Finding, if you're out in the woods and you had several days of rain, sometimes it's really hard finding something dry. But if you search around enough, you will find something under something where the rain didn't hit. And you get that out, and if you're early enough and it's dry outside, you can just take something that's even a little damp and just set it in the sun for a little while, and it will dry out adequately. Once you get it started, you get the little fire started, and you get it big, and then it gets bigger and bigger. Before you do that, normally you have to sort of set like little twigs up, and I like to do it in sort of a teepee-type thing. So you do a little tee, and then you have bigger sticks on top of that, and bigger sticks, and then almost logs on top of that. And it goes for each phase to get the whole thing going. And once it gets going, all you have to do is keep putting logs on it for the rest of the night. Jeff?
I was never in Cub Scouts long enough to get to the fire starting part, and I probably would have done pretty horrible at the whole taking a stick and creating a friction fire. But I have to say that my parents would always bring along a giant box of those Strike on any surface matches. Like, this was a 250 match box. More matches than you could use an entire week. And my dad got us started by giving us a small itty bitty match stick holder, or a match holder, that had a surface on the outside to strike a little roughened surface when we went camping. And he'd always give us a few of them and say, okay, here, light this, just to kind of keep us in practice, so to speak. But I remember that there was one year that I got him a magnesium sparker, fancy Swedish thing that was a strip of magnesium and a striker for it that you could use to create really hot sparks to throw on a fire. But even though the principle is the same, It never worked as well as advertising. Yeah, it looked really flashy and bright, but didn't really quite start a fire as well as we expected. The funny thing was, the thing that was most effective starting fires, oddly enough, was a magnifying glass. You would think that even though people see you doing it all the time, if you didn't have a match, it's usually a bright enough sunny day that you could find the light to essentially focus the magnifying glass. This is a pretty big magnifying glass, too. It wasn't quite a Fresnel lens size, but it was bigger than my hand. So if we had the time and it was a bright enough day, your dad would say, go ahead and try using the magnifying glass. And we would find bark that was dry enough and a little bit of newspaper that we brought with us to start a fire using the magnifying glass. And that was pretty darn cool. And there are some days where I kind of regret not sticking with the Cub Scouts longer than I had, but having a dad that was into camping like that was the next best thing, I think.
I think it was great.
I've been looking up the instructions for old Coleman camp stoves, and I remember when I was a kid that we were very much a supporter of Coleman products. We had the stove, we had the lanterns, and we had the catalytic heater, as well as the cooler that are still in the basement of my parents' garage to this day. But
we're copies. We're duplicates. We did too.
But I remember this whole idea of taking these cans of Coleman fuel, which always had that distinct smell to it, and lighting the camp stove in the morning for breakfast. You had to pump the thing up and put the match on the thing and step back a couple of feet and watch it go. And then in the evenings, you would take and light the lanterns, which was kind of tough because you had to take the match, light it, and get it all the way up inside the housing of the lantern just to light the little wick things there. And I remembered when Dad tried to get me to do that, that I always burned my fingers because you'd have to get the match really far in there, and half the time, because of the angle, you ended up the flame ended up hitting your fingers, and I dropped the match and I have to do it again. But the last thing I always remember is at night, he would take the last bit of the fuel from the lanterns, turn one of them out, pour the rest of the fuel with the funnel into the catalytic heater, light that up, and it would just be this really dim orange night light that would last a good third of the night, so that as you're falling asleep under the stars in the tent in the woods at night, you wouldn't freeze, unless you woke up in the middle of the night when it was pitch black and you didn't know where anything was. At least until the year that I brought a flashlight for the first time that didn't require matches at all.
Yep, flashlights are cool.
Yeah, except when they die on you in the middle of the trip. Then it's not as nothing as cool.
Yeah, that's true. The old battery didn't last as long as the current one.
Mm-hmm. Little additional tack on fact for me. I am a big fan of renewable energy flashlights these days because the flashlights I used to get as gifts from people, you never use them until you need them. And then when you need them, you discover that the batteries have been dead for however long it's been. So I have a couple of those no batteries required flashlights, one of which is a hand crank kind of thing. And the other one, which I picked up on my last trip to Angels Camp, is a solar-powered one that I leave in my car. And so far, it's been 3 months, and it's working really nicely. I leave it in there during the day, and when I get out in the evening, it works. So if you can find things that don't require fire, awesome. If not, there's nothing wrong with good old candles, which always knowing where your candles are is the safest backup during a power outage. Because, like I said, flashlights are great until they have no batteries and they're just useless pieces of plastic. And having something that will burn for a while, like a good-sized candle, and having the matches close by is one of the best ways to not sit in the dark during a power outage. And that's exactly what some friends and I did a number of years ago when PG&E had a transformer explode near our house, and it took them 11 hours to fix it. So we got a bunch of candles because we knew exactly where our candles were, and right next to them were the matches. Got ourselves set up with the candles, and we had a good old game of cards and storytelling with a bunch of candles as all the illumination we needed. Roland.
Oh, boy. You know, I'm spoiled now. I absolutely love it. I remember all the things we went through when the electricity would go out. We'd go to candles and we'd go to Coleman stove, lanterns, your Coleman lanterns. And we'd have those, you know, sort of in a closet in the house and have the fuel underneath the steps outside because it stunk. And we'd fill up the lanterns and then run them. And at the cabin, it happened even more often. In fact, we had some of those old kerosene lamp, and we would always have the kerosene around, fill them up, and light them up every once in a while just for fun if we didn't have a problem. But Minnesota, and especially northern Minnesota, seems to have a lot of lightning strikes, and you get a lot of outages up in that area, and so you always have to have emergency everything. It's better now than it was years ago, but still have them. Here in Mountain View, and in fact, they were telling me some stories down at that downtown about power going out just a couple weeks ago. But that was because a tornado hit close. This is Tornado Alley here.
That would do it.
Yep. But tornadoes normally don't cause fires, but they absolutely can. And fire starting. Let me go back to fire starting. What else do I know about fire starting? Well, let's see. I taught y'all how to start a fire. I remember that, you know, you'd hear the stories of how man started with fire. They'd probably run from one place to another with fire, and they would always keep it going, and they'd be a fire person. And we would tell these stories at night around the campfire, you know, as we started the fires and we were working, and the kids all got around. We'd have a big row. Sometimes we'd have big stones, and other times in other campsites they would have big logs. And the kids would sit all around, and you'd tell them stories like this about how primitive man had to go, and they would carry fire from place to place because fire was an absolute necessary thing for survival, especially the further north you got into the cold weather areas. Everywhere, people loved fire. It's the essence of us. And when I was young, I enjoyed all these different things of fire creation, fire starting, and I've been looking at it, and I'm trying to remember all the different ways. You know, you can start a fire at least 20 different ways, but I can't remember them.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I just remember a few of them. I could do it, I'm sure, you know, with a shoelace and a stick and, you know, and making a bow type thing, I could get one going. But flints, around here, you got Indian flints. You know, you find them all over the area. What happened with the Indian flints is when you go to these, all these places, and they will show you the flints and that they've dug up in all the parts of the United States. And they all came from one unique spot in the United States. And it shows that flint trading was a major endeavor going through the ages, so that these flints ended up all over the United States. So fire was one of the major transportables, and Indian vendors took them with them and used them as a major trade item. So
yeah.
Fire has always been a major aspect, and the tools to create it has been a major aspect of worldwide trading. It breaks barriers down. Yeah.
I remember my mom actually was collecting Indian flint rocks for a while just to kind of see the various types. But you would think that, well, maybe having a fire starter from a particular spot, and are they different? It's flint rock is flint rock, I would think. But
no.
On the other hand, we have lots of different minerals, and some are better than others at being the striking surface for things. It's a matter of hardness and, I guess, the ability to create sparks off of tinder, if you will. But I can say that I've never actually started a fire by hitting two rocks together. Couldn't even get a spark. Maybe I was using the wrong kind of rock. Who knows?
Well, I'll tell about that story when you hear the talk between Terry and I.
All right.
I was telling Terry, I said I had to save all my everything. She said, well, tell me how you started fires, and I told her, and you hear it again. I said, I don't have anything to say in the first half of the show if I do that. So I didn't say anything. So I kept these secrets, and you heard the secrets at the beginning of the show instead of the end of the show. But my life was full of times where I had to create fires, more from demonstration than anything else. So we should be coming up here on the half hour, shouldn't we, pretty quick?
Something close to that. Ah, there's the music. So before our fire goes out, let's take a break. We'll be back with more Old Man Stories in just a few.
You're listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. Roland and Jeff will be right back with more of Old Men Stories after this short break.
This is Terry Willits, Mom Software, giving stability, service, and excellence.
Thank you, Terry, for the leadership at Mom Software and the noble example you set for all. From our home here in Silicon Valley, and from where it all started in San Francisco 35 years ago, we welcome you to Old Men Stories. We hope you will continue listening to our radio presentation. We know you will hear a few wonderful stories that started from the home of Mom Software. www.momsoftware.com. One word, one S.
And we're back with more of Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. You're invited to join the circle and share your comments and questions in our always open chat room at http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. That's http://oldmenstories.wq4dradio.com. Now, let's give a warm welcome to our hosts, Roland and Jeff, as we continue today's storytelling journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to the second half of Old Man Stories, the fire starter episode with no Drew Barrymore in sight. I actually kind of like that movie. It was one of the movies that I always remember from being a kid. And the idea of being able to start a fire with your mind or special powers, that would probably be one of the more useful abilities that you could have. Okay, maybe not. How often do I need to start a fire? These days, not terribly. Think all of the appliances I have are electric. And the last time I remember lighting a candle was for a birthday party several months ago. And since I live in an apartment that has a fireplace that doesn't really work terribly well, I don't really need to light a fire in the fireplace. I think if there's ever a mass shutdown of everything, I'd be in trouble because I don't have that great of a fire starting skill. And maybe this is one of those things where I'm like, hey, finding a camping course that I can take might be a cool thing to have. Who am I kidding? I like living in the city, so to speak.
Shoestring and a stick.
There you go.
That works. Shoestring and a stick.
I will move it when I see it.
Right, it works. Takes a while, but it works. You got a whole bunch of kids around that take over after you poop out, though.
My shoes don't have shoelaces.
That's right. Yeah, that's always the problem, Jeff.
Well, anyway, tell us about our story for the day, if you would.
Okay, I'm just going to go right into it. Sharon's going to tell a story right after this one, so we get to hear two stories in a row.
Fire. Roland Willits, Old Men Stories.
Terry Willits, Old Men Stories. And
today is about fire starting. And I was talking, I said, Terry, I've got to find a speaker for fire starting. And then we were over at Aunt Minnie Miles' yellow store here in Mountain View, Arkansas.
Yes.
And we were looking at, she had these things on the outside. What did we find there?
We found an old wood-burning kitchen stove.
Yeah, made out of one of that.
I was raised on a farm in, well, middle of nowhere, nothing. It wasn't really a farm. In New Mexico, and there's not a lot of wood there. It's mainly grassland and prairie. And because there was no wood, we didn't have wood to burn in the stove. And I was telling Roland about when we were little kids, even before we started to school, our job was to go out into the pasture and get dried cow patties for the fuel. It burns very well, and you just have to make sure that it's all totally dry, both sides and inside. And that was our job. We would take a gunny sack, my little brother and I, and we would go out in the pasture, and we would pick up dried cow patties and bring them back. And that's what we burned for fuel. And my mother cooked with it, and I know that there's people out there going, bleh! But it's actually not dirty, and it doesn't smell once it's dry. It's just like hay or grass matted together.
And what if it was wet?
We didn't use it if it was wet. You didn't try to pick it up even because it was really messy. And then you'd have to take a bath.
And it's something you'd turn it over, right, if it was just a little...
Well, no, if it was dry on the top, we would flip it over to see if it was dry on the bottom. That's when we were gathering them.
Oh, okay.
And if it wasn't totally dry on the bottom, we'd just leave it flipped over, and we'd go get it the next day or the day after that.
And this oven, when I saw it, was sort of like a pot-bellied stove, only it was a pot-bellied oven. How would you describe it?
It didn't have an oven. It had pie warmers on top.
It had these big steel things that you put on top of the...
Oh, those, yeah, the covers.
Yeah.
Well, you had to open those up, and that's where you put the wood, normally wood or coal, wherever you burned for your heat. But we put the cow patties in there and set them on fire.
And how did you start the fire?
With matches, of course.
What kind of matches? We're talking about fire starting.
Kitchen matches.
They have.
The old kitchen matches.
Yeah.
They still make them today.
You
can buy them at the hardware store.
Right.
Sometimes grocery store.
The old boxes. And you were telling me about a special holder for it.
My mother had a metal holder that they were very popular during that time. It hung on the wall. It's just a metal box, but it had sort of a open scoop at the bottom and a little round opening on the side so that you could actually strike the match on the striker of the box.
Yeah, there's a striker there, didn't
And the adults always put them up really high because kids were not allowed to play with the matches. There were kitchen chairs that made perfect ladders for getting up high. We didn't do it because we would have gotten spanked, but we could have. We just didn't.
Did you ever start fires outside?
No. You didn't use up fuel to burn for fun.
Oh, okay.
You only used it for utility.
Okay.
For heating bath water, or sometimes we would build fires under a big kettle because we didn't have a washing machine. In fact, I didn't even know they existed at that time. So we used to put the white clothes in this big cast iron kettle and boil them to get them white. That was the only fire we built outside. My grandmother also had a big kettle like that, and she made soap in it. And she would build a fire under that, but...
What'd she make soap out of?
Lye and fat.
From the animals?
Yes, from the pigs. What did you do about fire starting?
I was in the city. Oh, yes, I did. But I have to tell stories at the first half of the show.
I don't want to use up my material story on this because he has a story that he has to tell on the show.
That's right. That's
okay,
right.
So never mind. I didn't ask that question.
Okay, well, but you could talk about you could talk about us going out and building campfires with the kids.
Yeah, but that's like when we were older and married.
Yes, but it's all about in the past. Remember when we had those Coleman stoves?
Yes, I do. I loved it. It was wonderful. We had a three-burner Coleman stove, and it actually had a hood that you lifted up in the back so that if the wind was blowing, you had to fire-protect it for cooking your food. That was roughing it.
That was roughing it for us.
Yeah.
And it actually had a little starter thing. It sort of twisted.
Yeah, that was rough.
It was really rough. You had to put the fluid into the coat.
Yeah, I didn't. Somebody else did.
I did. I did that. I was, you know, I got all the gadgets for doing stuff easily when we were out camping.
Okay.
But we were really equipped to camp well.
Well, I read somewhere about starting a fire with sticks, or maybe my grandpa told me about it. My grandpa told us a lot of stuff. He said that if you rub two sticks together really hard, you could start a fire. But all we got was a bunch of polished sticks because we just rubbed them and rubbed until they were like shiny. That didn't work. So then he said, no, we weren't doing it right. We needed to have a flat stick and then we could roll the other upright stick on that flat stick and be sure we had grass, dried grass there. Because once it started to smoke, then we could get a spark and we could put the grass on it and then blow gently and it would cause a flame. That didn't work either, but we got a lot of blisters on our hands from doing that. Then I saw a movie with Tom Hanks where he was like stranded on an island. And he very wisely used a string to pull.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that. I wasn't that bright, I guess, on making fires.
Yes.
But we had a lot of fun polishing sticks.
I bet you did. And you were in some pretty dry country.
Yes. And there was also flint. Now, everybody says flint makes fire. I never found any. I've never seen it done, except on television, probably.
Well, I can tell you, I have done it to make sparks. I think I did it once.
Did you actually get a fire going?
I actually got a fire going.
You really did? My hero! I wish I'd been there to see it.
Oh, I did. I did. I actually got a going. And I says, look, I got a going. And he says, show us how. And that was the...
That was the error, right? Show us how.
Couldn't get it started.
I know how that works. Murphy's Law.
Yes.
Murphy's Law.
Yes, it was funny. It was like, okay, sure. And I says, all you do is you just sit down. I couldn't get it.
Sometimes you just start fires accidentally.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So lightning does too.
Well, yeah, but... You don't control
that. You ever had any lightning start fires out in the desert?
Not at our place, but our neighbors got their barn burned down.
Wow.
It was struck by lightning because they didn't have a rod on top, a lightning rod.
Wow.
Of course, we all went over and helped them rebuild it.
Yep.
Well, not the kids because we just ran around playing, but the adults did. I like campfires now. I love the campfires at the cabin.
Terry absolutely loves fire.
Yeah, somebody...
She goes around with the fires, and she gets the stick, and she sticks it, and she straightens it, and she moves it, and she puts... And all the little sparks come up, but she has to straighten it. Oh, this rug is crooked.
I really enjoy those fires at the cabin. We have fun. We have a fire pit in the front next to the lake. And it's a joy, because we actually have wood to burn. Of course, we're modern-day pioneers, so we have those logs that you buy at the hardware store. So
they're called fire starters.
Fire logs.
Fire logs, yes.
They burn forever.
But all you do is start them, is just start the... Just, they have little strips there of paper, and you just start that. That's it. One match.
Well, if the wind's not blowing, we don't even use matches now. We have those sparky
things that...
Lighter thingies.
Oh, yeah, fancy.
That's the scientific description
and
name for
it. I like that. It works.
Yeah.
They're like a little gun.
Butane lighters for campfires.
They're nice.
All of you know what I'm talking about.
All of you that were in the old school, remember the patties.
And the sticks.
Right, but all of you should know the butane lighters.
That's right. If you're alive today, you should know about
Len
that.
Len can listen to this video. Have we explained to the universe how to start a fire now?
Okay. The other thing I wanted to say is in Scouts, in Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, they take the lint from the clothes dryers and pack them into egg holders.
Yeah.
The paper ones.
Right.
And put wax in them.
Right.
And they use those for fire starters.
Yeah.
They make them.
They work good, yeah.
Isabel did it.
I've been
Mark did it. Good night, Gracie.
Good night. Roland Willits, Old Men Stories.
Terry Willits, Old Men Stories.
So, egg carton fire starters. Something I never learned about. Interesting.
Oh, yeah. It worked. They used wax and lint from the dryer.
I will keep that in mind. Anyway, we have a special treat for us to round out the fire starting part of our show. Sharon has volunteered her story. So let's go ahead and, unless you have any comments, Roland, to hand it over to Sharon to walk us out.
I'll send you out in a ball of fire is what I'll do.
Uh-oh.
You were talking about fire starters in your story. Very interesting. My story actually is about another kind of fire starter. And what happened when yours truly got carried away with using it. Have you heard of something called fatwood or lightered? It goes by two names.
Nope.
That's a southern fire starter. And what they do is they take the pine wood when the pine is full of sap and they cut the pine out just the time when the tree is full of sap and they let it dry. And that particular wood, it's like an incendiary with that sap in it. You put a match to that, and boy, that baby burns real fast. And so you can start a fire with that like you wouldn't believe. Well, I decided that was great. One thing about this particular kind of fire starter that you have to be careful with when you have a fireplace is that it will put creosote up your chimney. It burns very sooty, so you need to make sure that you use just a very limited amount of it. Otherwise, you could have problems. And that is what happened one dark and stormy night at my place. Well, it wasn't actually quite stormy, but it was rainy and it was cold and it was a good thing it was raining. Let me tell you what happened here. My husband had gone to bed early and I was sitting up and thinking, you know, it's kind of rainy and cold out there. I think I'll go ahead and put a fire in the fireplace and enjoy myself for a little bit and then I'll go up to bed. So I got this fatwood fire starter out. And I thought, well, you know, I don't want to mess around and take a long time about this. I'm going to get a fire started fast tonight. I'm going to really get it started fast. So I put a nice little pile of wood in there, dry wood with the fat wood underneath it. And I got that fire starting. And before you knew it, that fire starter had a little bonfire going in my fireplace because I had those nice dry twigs on top and I piled them on. And boy, that old fire was going good and I was just a-chuckling. And then about that time, I started hearing a strange sound. Kind of started as like a pop, pop, pop. And then it turned into a roar. And next thing I knew, there was this terrible roar going up my fireplace. And that fire, of course, was going up my fireplace. And I thought, uh-oh. I quickly ran outside. And much to my horror, there were sparks flying right out of my chimney like a pyrotechnics display. Oh, no. I had started a chimney fire with all that nice creosote that had been accumulating in the chimney from using this stuff before. Uh-oh, quick call to the fire department. Grateful that it's raining because the sparks fall on the roof, and if it had been dry, the house would have burned down. But the fire department got out there quick enough, and, of course, I didn't put any more wood on the fire or anything as soon as I discovered my terrible mistake. You know, they put a little bit of water down. They did whatever they did, put a little water down the chimney, whatever. They got it out quick enough, and I felt incredibly, incredibly stupid. So I learned from that lesson that, first of all, starting a fire in the fireplace, take your time and do it right. And remember two things. First, to get your chimney cleaned regularly if you're going to burn any kind of green wood or especially fat wood. And second of all, better yet, just start the old-fashioned way with some of those techniques that you talked about or that Roland talked about and just let it go the natural way. It works. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Jeff.
I have to wonder, though, and this is me being naive, if you have a chimney fire, it's pretty much burning inside the chimney that is made of brick anyway. What's the problem with that?
The problem is that, well, there's two things. First of all, if you have a good solid brick chimney, you're very fortunate. If you do it with a wood stove and you've got a metal flue pipe, your house is toast, guaranteed. But if, in my case, we did have a good strong brick chimney, the danger was all those sparks flying out and hitting the roof.
Ah, gotcha.
And like I say, if it hadn't been for the fact that it was raining, very likely it would have started a fire on the house. So anyway, you need to really be careful with fire. Even adults can do dumb things. So that was what I did, all right.
Actually, adults are more likely to do dumb things because they're like, I'm an adult. I know what I'm doing.
Yep, we are that. We do have that tendency.
You don't want to know about the conversation my husband and I had about that later either.
Oh,
no,
dear.
We don't. No, we don't want to hear it. We don't want to hear about it. But it's one of those nice stories that your husband told over and over again, probably.
Not when I was around, but yes, he probably did. With his own male embellishments, if you know what I mean.
Of course.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We're storytellers.
And it gets better every time. You know that.
Gotta get bigger and bigger every time.
Absolutely. The older you get, the better you work.
Well, I'll let you all finish off. I'm out of here.
All right. Thanks so much, Sharon. And I was going to say originally that the techniques that you've learned to start fires generally don't work well indoors, but then I recalled that there was, in fact, one time where I took that magnifying glass that was stored in my parents' bedroom on my dad's side of the bed one summer afternoon, and I used that magnifying glass to start a small bit of newspaper on fire, because not only can you use magnifying glasses to light fires in the fireplace, but you can also do it in a ceramic dish that was intended for use as an ashtray.
Yes,
I'm just kind of curious to see what's possible. The answer is yes. And the thing about lighting a fire inside the house is that there is no mistaking the smell of something burning. So
my mom got home.
She said, "What's burning?" And of course, I set some newspaper on fire with a magnifying glass in the ashtray. Here's the evidence. It was under control. And she said, "I should be mad at you for starting a fire in the house, but it was under control." Right? Right. Don't tell your dad.
Whoa. I don't know if I ever got in trouble that way. I got in so much trouble so many times, it's hard to... But, I mean, I never got super trouble, but I always got little troubles like that. Instead of lighting fires, I got a whole groups of matchbooks, and I'd stuff them in the little CO2 cartridges and light the end, and it would go off like a rocket. But it put a hole in the neighbor's garage.
Oops.
I mean, it was a gun. I mean, it was lethal. But it had been aimed wrong. It would have killed someone. But it was like, okay, Roland, now you have to go repair the thing. I'll try it. But then, you know, the neighbor came to save me and fixed it himself. He was absolutely fascinated with the toy.
Well, if it ever comes down to it, I will find a house that has a chimney in it and support the chimney sweepers industry by having them do it regularly. Now that I know that can be a problem, because it would be a real pain to buy a place and then lose it because I set a fire in the fireplace one time too many.
Right. Well,
we are pretty much out of time for today. If you're going to start a fire, be safe. Don't do it for fun. Do it safely or not at all. Thanks for listening to Old Men Stories. See you next week.
You can't start a fireside gathering without a fire. Fire itself brings light to the darkness, warmth to the soul, and an ambiance that adds to the mystery of a tale. What sparks the flames of your history, and were you given the honor of kindling the flames? Jeff Young,
Roland Willits,
Old Men Stories.
You've been listening to Old Men Stories on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. The story for the day may end here, but the adventure continues. Join us next time for another round of stories around the virtual campfire. Roland and Jeff want to hear what stories you have to share, too. Join the circle over at www.oldmenstories.org or send Roland and Jeff an email at oldmenstories@wq4d.net. That's oldmenstories@wq4d.net. And remember that you are already a master storyteller in your own right. We want to hear your story.